Zealand of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Patitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Welcome to In the Narthex, a radio program of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand. I'm your host, Father Pavlos of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, located in lovely Western Springs. As always, it's our joy to be with you, and we have an exciting program to share with you today. It so happens that today is the day in which the Church commemorates St. Irene Chrysovalandou. Now, that name might not mean anything to you yet, but I'm hoping by the end of today's program it will mean something to you. Very important. She is a very beautiful woman who lived in the 800s, approximately 800 years after Christ, and whose life continues to touch people till today. And we'll explain that to you more as we go into our program. And we thank you for listening, as always. Just a quick translation of that beautiful hymn. Not a temporal kingdom on earth didst thou obtain, but Christ, thy most comely bridegroom, vouchsafe thee heavenly crowns, and thou reignest as a queen with him eternally. For thou didst dedicate thyself unto him with all thy soul, O Irene, our righteous mother. Thou boast of Chrysovalandou and mighty help of all the Orthodox. Now, to get you into the story, we need to go back, of course, in time to the time of the Byzantine Empire. For some of you who have never heard of the Byzantine Empire, just you need to know that it was a continuation of the Roman Empire. And once the Roman Empire had at its head a man who initially wasn't a Christian, but anyway came to believe and follow Christ, that same man moved the Roman Empire, its capital from Rome, of course, which would have been logical to be in Rome, to a new city that took his name, Constantinople. Of course, he didn't call it that. He called it New Rome. And so today, in the church, it's called New Rome. It's also called Constantinople. But he, in humility, referred to it as New Rome. And there are many reasons why he went there, but we're not going to talk about that today. But in the development of the new Christian empire, as it came to take on the characteristics of Christ and the gospel, it really flourished in a way that is worth studying. But anyway, in that development, many saints came to live and to express a deep and abiding reverence for Christ. And so that's really what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about this Saint Irene, who was a person of deep theology and deep love for Christ. Now, she started out her life as just a simple woman, I guess you could say, but from a very pious family, a very cultured family. And she loved Christ, of course, as a child, grew up in the church. But it happened that the emperor was a boy at that time, and the emperor Theophilus died. His mother Theodora was the regent, taking care of the throne, and that meant that the soon-to-be emperor was a young boy, who was perhaps 6 years old at the time. After some time, when he reached the age of about 12, his mother, Theodora, chose to find him a wife. And just as you heard in the story tales of your youth, so it was often in the history of the Byzantine Empire. The queen set out scouts on a mission to find a beautiful woman who was noble as well as virtuous and worthy of becoming an empress, and of course a spouse to Michael. They've searched, these scouts of course were sent out to all the parts of the empire, but some of them came to the land of Cappadocia. And Cappadocia is the land of the famous family of St. Basil the Great and St. Gregory the Theologian, St. Macrina. And so it was a well-storied part of our church's geography, if you will, a very holy place. And there they found a woman of great piety and holiness. Her name was Irene. And she was also extremely beautiful. And of course, as we said, a daughter of noble parents. So the scouts, realizing they had found a woman of excellence, they took her at once to the empress, and thus to fulfill their duty. Irene's only sister was also chosen, and she later became the wife of the empress's brother, Vardis. They took St. Irene to Constantinople, and as they were heading that way, they passed in Asia Minor a mount called Olympos, or Olympus. And she had heard of a venerable ascetic living there named Ioannikios. Somehow she persuaded the scouts to allow her to visit with him, and he, upon seeing her, recognized the spiritual progress of the young girl and exclaimed, "Welcome, servant of God Irene. Go to the capital and rejoice, for the convent of Crisovolando needs you to shepherd her virgins." So Irene, of course, was quite amazed at this, and she fell at his feet and praised him, receiving and strengthened by his good and sage counsel. And in this way, amazed at his gift of foreknowledge, she went on her way. When she finally arrived at the capital, her relatives were there to greet her, and she found out that she wasn't going to be the wife of the emperor after all, since he had already chosen someone several days before her arrival. And she rejoiced in this, knowing that now she could attend to a deeper desire of her heart, which was to become a bride to the heavenly bridegroom, our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. What a beautiful song. We love Divna on this program, as you know. Every program begins with Divna, and she does such a beautiful job with her singing. So we're talking about St. Irene Krisovalandu, and we're talking about a time that is a long time ago, the 800s after Christ, and we think about how much the world has changed. But some things don't change, and a young man needed a good wife, and his mother intervened. She said, well, we'll find him the best one. And scouts went out all over the world. That doesn't happen much anymore, but they found St. Irene. But the other scouts found other young women, and the king or the emperor found and chose someone before St. Irene appeared in the city of Constantinople. But that's how God had planned it, because this young woman then quickly decided to enter the convent of St. Krisovalandu, which is just the name of a place in Constantinople. And there she dedicated herself. She wasn't in charge from the beginning. There was another abbess there. And she quickly, though, this young Irene, abandoned every worldly vanity and every worldly way of thinking. And she took on the monastic habit and dressed herself in the hair of the animal to braid her skin. And she took on what they call the light yoke of Christ, the anointed one, the most sweet. And all the sisters were amazed at her humility. And she attended all the services, and she did all of her work without complaint. She was a great person, very, very beautiful person, and very attentive. Now, quickly, God revealed her to the abbess as a woman of great spirituality, and she became ultimately the abbess upon the abbess's death. And that happened in a miraculous way, and I don't have time to tell you all the details, but just we can say that the abbess revealed to her that she wanted her to take this role, and she revealed to all the other nuns that she wanted her to have this role, and then the patriarch himself selected her. And upon hearing the news, she wept and wept and wept. She didn't want to receive this heavy burden, but she did her best to accept it and to carry that weight. And what is the weight, of course, of being an abbess? Is that you have responsibility toward all the other nuns and to the safekeeping of their souls. And so that's what she did. She was very, very dedicated to caring for the souls of her sisters, the nuns. And so what can I tell you about her in terms of her holiness? Even during her life, she was known for being a miracle worker, and she acquired the gift of ceaseless prayer and often kept all-night vigils, praying from dusk until dawn, standing on her feet. People who were possessed of demons were healed by her, and people who were sick were also healed. And she filled the monastery with virtue by her very pious example. Now, what else can I tell you about her? In her life, when she was praying, it happened that one of the nuns came upon her. It was often her habit to pray through the night, and even to wander sometimes outdoors. There was a courtyard at the monastery, and one of the nuns happened to see her in the courtyard. And seeing her, her feet weren't touching the ground. She was elevated off the earth, and not only that, but the cypress trees in the courtyard were bending down to pray with her. And this nun, I guess you'd say she was a little bit cheeky. She decided that no one would believe her story if she didn't find a way to prove it. So she took a handkerchief and she tied it to the top of this cypress tree, which had bowed down to pray with Saint Irene. And then, of course, when the saint was done praying, the tree was restored to its original height. And when the nuns came out and they saw the handkerchief tied so high up the tree, they said, who could have gotten up there to tie that handkerchief? And then she was able to tell her story. But St. Irene was aghast that such a story had been told about her, because she was very humble and didn't want to draw any attention to herself. Now, the thing that's my biggest motivation for telling you today about this story is because I want to tell you some of the miracles of this holy saint. But before I do, let's see if we can play another song.
Here is κλαίος, όσος η ομάρτης εν θεότατος, ο πλήστης εν έτεση διαμήνας αγνώριστος, εγκεκριμένος υπογύνθη εις κρίμασιν, επεσχάτων δε ως πολύφωτος ήλιος. Λάμψας και των θαυμάτων σου ακτίσει και χάρισιν, εν θαυμαστές οπτασίες καταφεδρίνων τους άπαντας, Χριστόν εκδισώπη τες ψυχές ημών δοθήνε το μέλλον.
Music of Audrey Assad, which we also have enjoyed so much in this program. Now I want to read to you, if you allow me, from the Miracle of Saint Irene. Now this was published in 1989. We said that the saint died in the early 900s. So 1,000 years, more than 1,000 years after her death, where did this take place? In Chios. This story takes place in Chios of Greece, and it's written in English, and I have here in my hands the monthly publication that comes from the monastery of St. Irene Chrysovolandou in Lykovrisos Attikis, in a place near Athens called Lykovrisos. And if you can imagine, monthly, this magazine for years now has been publishing the miracles of the saint that happened through her intercessions. This one is particularly outstanding. Please, if you can, pay attention. St. Irene Chrysovolandou, my husband and I thank you from deep in our hearts for the miracle you worked by giving him his life. Suddenly this year, on the 20th of May, my husband could feel a loud buzzing noise in his head, and within 2 days he began having fits. During these 2 days he was in the hospital at Chios, and the doctor sent us at once to Athens for scans. The next day in Athens his condition worsened. He began to lose his sight and not remember or recognize his family. Fortunately, we quickly went to the general hospital. After examination, they found that he had a serious form of encephalitis. In the meantime, I had notified his father to come from America, as the doctors told us he was in danger of dying. They had found a virus in his head and tied down his legs and hands as he had fits. After these terrible fits, he was frozen for 2 days as if dead. That is why my father-in-law, in seeing his condition, hearing the doctors say, "As you see, there is no hope for life," notified his son, my brother-in-law, to come immediately from America to be at his brother's deathbed. In the midst of this hopeless situation of seeing that I was losing my husband, I remembered the Saint Irene Chrysovolandou, who was so miraculous. She had given us our first daughter when we came for the first time to her monastery and prayed to her. So I left the hospital with my father-in-law and came to the monastery and prayed with tears in my eyes before her icon to cure my husband, leaving behind my ring. I said, "Saint Irene, take pity on my daughters, who will be left orphans. Intervene with Christ and show your miraculous power now where medical science can do nothing, and doctors say it is up to God. On leaving the monastery, we went to the hospital where my husband was being given oxygen, and the doctors confirmed that his condition was critical. Even though we were worried, we hoped in your miracle. I went near to him and anointed him with some of the oil which we had taken from your holy lamp. The next day, Almighty Saint, your miracle worked. Waking up for a little while out of the coma, and without knowing that the previous day we had come to your monastery, his first word was your name, Saint Irene. He said, and then he went on to say to us, don't go to the monastery, because I saw her, and she told me that she had taken away all the pain from me, and I will get better. Imagine how we felt. We were all in tears and made the sign of the cross, even my husband, who was so weak. In this state, we told him that we could not move him, but as soon as he was better, we could bring him to the St. Irene's monastery. To comfort him, I gave him an icon of St. Irene and put it upside down under his pillow, and he tried to turn it around and kiss it, which was a sign to us that he was coming out of the coma and was aware of what he was doing. That same day, they removed the oxygen and the drip, and within a day he improved so much that he asked to read a newspaper. When we saw how amazed we were with him that he had recovered so quickly and was asking for a newspaper to read, he told us that the saint had again visited him that night and told him, come to my monastery and bring the apples which your wife had promised. I have cured you. He himself confirmed that he felt well. Now, in my prayers to make my husband better, I had promised the saint 3 kilos of apples. It was not the apples St. Irene wanted so much, but in this way she was showing me that she had heard my prayers and not overlooked my tears. On hearing this, a member of the clergy, who was in the same ward as my husband with a stroke, lifted up his hands and called out, a miracle of God, a miracle! The doctors were amazed by what they had seen. They were soon taking blood samples continuously and could see that the virus which had been present before had now gone. They could find nothing, and even that they had to admit that it was a miracle. That is why they allowed us to leave the hospital and to come together with my father-in-law to the monastery of St. Irene Krisivalandu. With tears in our eyes of joy and gratitude, we prayed at her icon, thanking her for reaching out so quickly and taking away all the pain out of him as she had told him she had done in his sleep. When we returned to the hospital, the tests continued, but they were all clear, to the amazement of the doctor who had observed him. Anyway, it goes on just a little bit more, but the point is that this man from Chios, Mr. George Leondi, was healed of encephalitis in a miraculous way. And as you heard the story confirms, if you believe, of course the people don't just make things up when they write them, that this man knew things that he couldn't have known from the coma. He knew that his wife had prayed for the apples, that she would offer apples to the saint. And so, and he somehow knew that Saint Irene was the one who had healed him. And even though he didn't have any knowledge of the fact that his wife had been praying to St. Irene, being the fact that he was in a coma. So we see these kinds of things happen, especially in the life of St. Irene, again and again. And what is she most noted for, believe it or not, is for helping people who are infertile to have children. And I know in our day and age that's often a common problem. But people pray to her, they fast for 3 days or a week, and they'll eat some of the apples that are blessed at her monastery, and they are made well. Now, of course, the apples come to them as a dried good, if you will, but they come, and the people make the sign of the cross, and they drink holy water, and they eat some of the apple, and not only are they healed, but they conceive. And if you want to go to Greece and see how many people have the name Krisovalandi or Krisovalandu, you'd be amazed how many people have been touched by that wonderful, wonderful saint.
Descend upon thy
I think we have enough time to read one more of the miracles of St. Irene, just from this 1989 edition of the monthly periodical of the miracles of St. Irene. St. Irene Krisvalandu, accept from us too a great thank you from deep in our souls for the gift you gave us when we had given up hope after 12 whole years of marriage containing worry and sorrow. One miscarriage followed another. No doctor in Greece or abroad could bring about a positive result. Only medicines and hospital therapy can I remember during all those years. I did not give up hope, and I always said that St. Irene Krisvalandu would not overlook us, however sinful we are. Every day for 6 years I prayed to her and anointed myself with a miraculous oil and went to her holy monastery several times. Here is the result of my faith and patience. For 9 months, the divine grace of St. Irene overcame the many difficulties of the pregnancy, and now a lovely Krisvalandu, thanks to the intervention of the St. Irene, fills our home, our life, and our empty arms. Glorious be Jesus Christ's holy name for working a miracle for us through St. Irene. Have us always under your protection, St. Irene Krisvalandu, and we shall always tell of your miracle. 1,000 thanks is nothing for the treasury you sent us, sweet saint. Keep our little boy always well and enlightened, and us capable Christians. You also worked the miracle, St. Irene Krisvalandu, for our godson, Krisvalandi Voyadzi, for curing him of leukemia, which he had when he was 3 years old. Today he's enjoying life, thanks to your intervention. Every time we mention your holy name, our eyes fill with holy tears. We thank God for your divine grace, St. Irene Krisvalandu. We kneel with respect to your divine grace. Your humble servants, George and Irene Kostopoulos, Thessaloniki. As we come now to the end of our program, I thank you so much for listening today. As you know, this program is a ministry of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand, whose Arch Shepherd is His Eminence, Archbishop Amphilochios. Presently, His Eminence is en route to visiting Constantinople, and in bringing with him our first ordained Samoan Orthodox priest, Father Ioanni. And we wish him and his beautiful wife, Salome, much grace and blessings. And we ask that God bless them on their trip and keep them always in His care, and the entire Synodia that travel with Him. Thank you again for listening, and we look forward to being with you again next week as we continue this wonderful program in the Narthex. Sure.